Gather round wizards, it's time to explore. A world full of magic, we're opening the door. With Dan and Jessica, we're here for the ride. On broomsticks and butterbeer, come along for the glide. Chapter by chapter, we're diving so deep through Hogwarts halls where the secrets creep. From the sorting hat to the wizarding fights, potions and spells and those magical nights. With our cups full of butterbeer, we analyze the lore, the friendships that blossom, the battles and more. Every word written we take with delight, bringing Harry's world back into the light. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know.
Welcome back to another edition of Broomsticks and Butterbeer, episode number 171.
Woo!
I'm Dan Rhino.
I'm Jessica Rhino.
And we are continuing our journey through Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. And last time we talked about The Wedding, Chapter 8. Today we're going to be digging into Chapter 9.
On our wedding anniversary, we talked about The Wedding.
We did.
We planned that out. Mm-mm. Strategically.
Mm-mm. Happy coincidence.
Yeah.
Last time we talked about Chapter 8, I'll recap that real quick before we get into Chapter 9. In Chapter 8, it was the wedding of Bill and Fleur at the Burrow. Harry takes some polyjuice potion and becomes Cousin Barney to hide his identity. Dumbledore's friend Elpheus Doge is there and gets into an argument with Auntie Muriel over Dumbledore's legacy. Victor Crumb shows back up, and he is not happy about a symbol that Luna's dad is wearing around his neck.
How dare he?
Any good feelings we were having are taken away when Kingsley Shacklebolt's Patronus shows up, announces that the Ministry of Magic has fallen, because that's what Patronuses can apparently do.
Yep.
The Minister is dead, and Death Eaters are coming. So Chapter 9, titled A Place to Hide. We start this chapter pretty much immediately after Kingsley's Patronus interrupts Bill and Fleur's wedding. And it's just panic. Panic at the disco.
Yeah, pretty much.
Death Eaters are already here. People are disapparating in every direction. The Order of the Phoenix is trying to shield everyone who's still there. And in the blink of an eye, in a heartbeat, Hermione grabs Ron and Harry and they disapparate together.
Poof.
So Hermione brings Ron and Harry to a busy London street in the Muggle world. And her reasoning is that the Death Eaters will probably expect Harry to hide somewhere magical. So let's go somewhere not magical.
Yeah.
You're giving a lot of good insight.
Poof.
Good insight this episode.
Just
doing great. This chapter should really be called the Hermione Granger Show. So if I was on the Book Cave podcast and, you know, coming up with an alternate title for something, Book Cave podcast available on all podcast platforms. If you want to hear Jess and her crew talk about smutty books.
Not all smutty.
Mm.
But those are called Jennifer books now.
I got you.
Anastasia was like, I was reading this book. It's a total Jennifer book.
Mm-hmm. And that just means smut, yeah. Snogging left and right?
Yep.
But Hermione is just the star of this chapter by far. That would be if I had to title it something else, I would call it the Hermione Granger Show. What were some of her highlights for you in this chapter?
Well, she got the boys out of there quick. She had everything ready, packed, prepared. She just has everything. She thought of everything.
And she thought of everything while all of the planning for the wedding was going on, all the preparation was going on.
While the boys thought of nothing.
Hermione did everything. I mean, she
I think Harry asked her, when did you do this?
I even packed backup clothes for them, enchanted her bag so it'd be able to hold infinite amounts of stuff. She has not just everything for the immediate situation that they're in right now, but everything to carry on the quest to destroy the Horcruxes. I mean, she's got everything, and she already had to have had this escape plan mapped out.
Yeah, she said for a few days. She's been ready for a few days. That mm-hmm. I had a feeling that we needed to be ready to run any moment. And so I had everything packed, for the past couple of days.
And I'm guessing she even thought about the destination in advance, too. I'm sure she kind of thought of every...
She might have, but she said, because Ron asked her why here, and she's just like, I don't know, it just came to me. But she did mm-hmm. know she wanted to go somewhere in the Muggle world.
Mm-hmm.
And, she's kind of their Muggle guide. Yes, Harry grew up in the Muggle world, too, but he didn't really get to do anything.
Yeah.
He's just kind of kept locked up most of the time. He didn't, have a lot of freedoms. So I feel like she got to go out and navigate the world more than he did. So she's kind of going to be their guide out here in the Muggle world.
So talk about this bag that she is enchanted.
It's magic, Daniel.
I've always joked about you having a Hermione bag.
And now you know why.
Because you have all these things that you carry around that seem to bail people out of different situations.
Yes, and if it's not in my bag, it's in my car.
So what are your go-tos in your Jess bag?
Well, I've got chargers for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a multi-tool. We were arguing about that at Jackbox a lot last night. But I do have a multi-tool. Ibuprofen. Well, there's more because we went that one time and Bridget had an allergic reaction. I did not have Benadryl on me. So I now have Benadryl in there, the bottle with the ibuprofen. And mints, because sometimes that my belly gets upset and I like a mint. Band-aids, pens, notebook. I don't know.
Battery for a 1986 Nissan Sentra.
I took that out. Mm. I thought that was
yeah, that's stupid. That's just like
out of date.
Yeah.
A bit of overkill. This doesn't hold a charge. It's like by the time I need it, it's going to be worthless.
But you're kind of our go-to for, anything. There's been times, I can't think of specifics off the top of my head, but I know there have been times where, I wish I had this. And you had it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's my job.
It's kind of become your thing. So don't let people down now that they have these high expectations of you.
There was one time we went and helped out at a dog auction. We have Basenjis. Help out with Basenji Rescue, and Basenji Rescue got word that there was going to be a dog auction, and there was going to be 27 Basenjis auctioned off. And so we mobilized and went to this auction and bid on as many of the dogs as we could get. And yeah, that day it was, does anybody have? And I go, yeah, it's in my car. Does anybody have? Yeah, I got that too. Does anybody have? Yep. I had extra leashes. I had scissors and I had a first aid kit. Somebody got bit really bad, full blown first aid kit. It's just, I have it. It's in my car or it's in my bag.
It's nice to have a Jess in your troop who's always ready. You're the Hermione of the group, always ready for everything. So Harry and Ron are, just like me, just taken back by the level of preparation that Hermione has in this chapter. And, just the fact that there was so much commotion going on in the Burrow over the last week, but Hermione was ready to leave at a moment's notice. And like I said, she had prepared for all of them, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, to be able to leave at a moment's notice. It wasn't just, mm-hmm. Let's just grab whatever we can and get out of here. No, she had this all plotted out just in case.
She was doing it right in front of their faces. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of scenes back where she was sitting there, they're all having a conversation, and while they're talking, she was sorting through books and uh-huh. was like, well,
she's
we
like,
need
oh,
this.
I probably, well, we need I this. Would like to have this, but no, I don't think it's a need book, so I'll put it in this pile.
Yeah, so they were just oblivious. She was literally doing this in front of their faces, and they didn't know what was going on.
Well, boys are stupid and not very observant. I think we have kind of come to that conclusion over 171 episodes here that mm-hmm. boys are dumb.
But he does give her a nice compliment. It just made me think of how he was complimenting her before, but this one was real. He was oh my god, you're amazing.
Mm-hmm. She is. I mean, she really is. She kind of saves the day again here. So we're in London. Hermione's getting catcalled by some dudes on the street.
Yeah, that was not quite intense,
like,
but...
Hey, honey, what you doing?
I wasn't really, like, expecting that. I was like, why is this in here?
Yeah. Very gross.
Just to add to the level of...
I mean, just, I guess, just to creepiness. Tell you that just because you're not in the wizarding world right now, just because you're kind of blending in with the muggle world...
Doesn't mean you're safe.
No, you're never safe. No. Very much so.
You know, she was probably, I know she was like in her dress still and heels and everything, so it probably stood out, but then they were saying they were catcalling some other girl as soon as they went into Yeah, I was like, oh,
just
okay.
Drunk dudes.
Just drunk dudes. Just mm-hmm. being drunk dudes. Yeah,
catcalling teenagers. Gross. So after we changed into some muggle clothes, which of course Hermione had packed for everybody, Harry, Ron, and Hermione go into a coffee shop to plan their next move. Harry's under his invisibility cloak, which Hermione also brought.
Of course. It was she did great. She did great, but there was a little bit not quite overreaching, but boundaries. Like, you just took all of his stuff and put it in your bag?
Yeah. Because boys are stupid. You know that.
Yeah, I do. But it was just a little okay. I mean, yes, you should have done that. But it was also, I don't know, a moment where I was like, you just went into his things and looked around and took what you needed.
I'm sure she got extra underwear and stuff like that, too.
Hey, there are some women that have to pack for their husbands, uh-huh. guys. Uh-huh. You stress me out because you wait till the last minute, but you do it yourself.
I did it myself.
Yeah, you did it all by yourself, and you used a suitcase.
Like, oh, what a good boy you are.
Not a laundry basket.
My dad will go out of town, he'll take a laundry basket. That'll be like his suitcase.
But it's just going to end up in the laundry basket
anyway.
He
throws all the stuff in there, and like if we go to a hotel, he walks through the hotel with a laundry basket. He's just a caricature of a real person. It's just... I tell people these stories and they don't believe it.
You know, there's these things. They're really neat. They you put your stuff in them and then you zip them closed so your stuff doesn't fall out. And it's got a handle and wheels. Makes it really easy to transport. Mm.
Maybe at some point in the future we'll have this technology, but doesn't seem like we have it right now. But yeah, Hermione's just, this chapter I think really highlights just how important she is to Harry's journey and to the battle that's with Voldemort's forces that is to come. But we go into the coffee shop. It's really their first brief chance to catch their breaths and process everything that's happened in just a short period of time. From, hey, we're at a wedding, everything's going great, and then, you know, we're being attacked by Death Eaters, we have to disapparate real quick, which is kind of, you know, shakes your brain up a little bit. Then we're, you know, in the middle of London wearing wizarding dress robes and getting, you know, weird looks. And then we're getting catcalled by drunk dudes on the street. And all of that happens within a 3-minute period of time. So we get into the coffee shop and we kind of get a second to catch our breath and plan our next move. And just when they're talking about their options, a couple of workmen come into the shop, and of course, they're Death Eaters.
Of course.
What were some of the highlights of the Battle of the Coffee Shop for you? Give me the Cliff's Notes.
Harry, I guess, was watching them, and he knew exactly what they were doing. They all, pulled their wands out at the same time. And I had to giggle because Ron was just, a second behind. But then later he blames it on his jeans being too tight.
Oh, yeah. You packed my old jeans.
I couldn't
get my wand out of my skinny jeans.
I would have been ready with everybody else, but my jeans.
It's your fault, Hermione. You packed the wrong jeans.
She did all of this work, and she still gets blamed because he wasn't as... And he could have just let it go. Nobody called him out about being late. To the draw, he pushed her down, got her out of the way, and he still did things. He contributed.
I mean, Harry was under the invisibility cloak and got it like a few shots off, like where the bad guys didn't know where they were coming from.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, just stay in a corner and just like.
Just pop, pop, pop.
Or, just fire them
or
off.
Or you got to keep moving. Yeah. Because if they feel
just,
it's coming from that
zigzag,
way.
Zigzag, baby.
Zigzag.
You could just walk right up to them and just like, boop, you know.
Right on the nose.
Did a little fairy godmother tap on the forehead and
yeah.
put them to sleep if you wanted to. So, what else there? We had the muggle waitress who...
Yeah, she kind of got caught in the crossfire. She
actually got caught with like a spell or something.
Yeah, it like bounced off of something. And
so, but she didn't get...
Which is also weird because sometimes spells hit things and they explode.
Yeah.
And sometimes they hit things they weren't meant to hit and they bounce.
So, she got hit by like... one of Harry's ricochets, right?
Yes.
So Harry's still in the mode of stun, not kill.
Yes.
Because, and I guess it's a good thing here because, you know, an innocent muggle didn't die. She just got knocked out. But, and there's even a moment, you know, there's like an ethical dilemma where Ron asks, what are we going to do with them? Kill them? They'd kill us. Mm-hmm. But Harry's still not, we've talked about this in past episodes. He's still not on. He's still kind of on that no kill Batman path. What's up with that?
Well, I don't know. Like he did want to kill Bellatrix after Sirius died. Mm-hmm. And maybe that kind of scared him that he was so willing to kill. Or maybe it's just more of, I've got so much of Voldemort in my head. I have to draw a line somewhere between me and him. And maybe that's the line he's chosen to draw. But, you know, he did cross it the one time.
Mm-hmm. And maybe he didn't like the feeling that came mm-hmm. with that. And, you know, vowed never to go to that dark place again. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you're in a war and yeah. you've already had lives lost on your end, people who are very important to you. And he's still, you know, doing the Batman thing where, you know, we catch the bad guys, who throw them in Arkham and they escape and kill innocent people. And then we catch them and throw them back in and they escape and kill innocent people.
I think this is a poor example, though. I know what you're trying to say, but here, strategically, they were correct. Like, if they come across these dead Death Eaters, then they know something happened.
Mm-hmm.
If we can wipe their memories and fix this place up, it'd be like it never happened.
So they repair the damage to the shop, they erase the memories of the muggle witnesses, they... and the Death Eaters, leave the Death Eaters unconscious. Why does Hermione say that she's never done a memory charm?
I don't know. I was very confused.
Didn't she just do one on her parents?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I don't know. I've never done one
before.
I've
never done it. I don't know what to do. I'm like, but wait. I mean, all I can think is this is just a different version.
Mm-hmm. So she, like... altered memories rather than just erasing them.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of did the Men in Black flashy thing,
but didn't just, yeah, I don't know.
You've wanted to go to Australia your whole life. You don't
you
have a daughter.
You should do that.
You should do that right now. You're going to take out all your savings. You're going to go to Australia.
Sell
you're going to stay there.
Just go.
Yeah, that was confusing to me. I thought, I didn't know if that was just a mistake by the writer. I didn't know if that was, like you said, a different variation of the spell.
I'm gonna go with it was probably a mistake, but now we're gonna call it a variation because it is printed and done.
Bob Ross said there are no mistakes, mm-hmm. or said happy errors
accidents.
Or happy accidents or whatever. So we, like I said, we got that moment where we decided, well, are we going to kill these guys or not? But we've got another issue to deal with, and that's the question of how the Death Eaters found them so quickly. What were some of the possibilities that they threw around for how they were found out so quick?
That Harry still had the trace on him. So it was, whoa, what's coming up? Nope. Cardinals and the Diamondbacks!
Breaking news.
Make sure you tune in, because Cardinals and Diamondbacks are starting in a few minutes.
Yep, but this won't be posted for a few hours, and the game will already be over.
You will have missed it.
Yep.
What were we saying?
What were some of the theories for how they were found so quickly?
They thought that Harry might still have the trace on him, although he had his birthday and he is technically an adult, and that's supposed to make the trace poof disappear.
But maybe now that the bad guys have control of the ministry, maybe they could have
altered it somehow, mm-hmm. or reapplied the trace, or made some other trace, something. There had to have been some sort of trigger that showed where they were.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, could it just be the connection that he still has to Voldemort?
He's never been able to trace him through it before.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, originally, the Order of the Phoenix clubhouse at Grimmauld Place was not an option because Snape, who's now working with Voldemort, knows the location. So, how does Harry talk Ron and Hermione into heading to number 12, Grimmauld Place?
If, in fact, they are tracing them somehow, no matter where they go, a bunch of Death Eaters will show up. But if they go to Grimmauld Place, only Snape can come in, so there's only one. I'd rather battle one Death Eater than a whole bunch, mm-hmm. basically, is what he said. Also, he's just kind of gunning for a fight with Snape.
And the house still has protections on it, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione find that out pretty quick when they go in. What were some of the creepy haunted house enchantments that they had there? And was it just me? Or did these protections seem more like minor inconveniences than true hardcore roadblocks?
Maybe they were distractions from the real curses.
I think they were just distractions in general. Like, look over there.
Look over here. It was a tongue-tying curse.
Okay.
But I guess because it knew, it triggered. But then it was like, oh, you're not Snape. Never mind. And they took it back. It took it back. Because the only time they tied their tongue for like a second.
Uh-huh.
And then it went away. But I guess if it had been Snape, it would have tied his tongue and then he wouldn't have been able to say any spells.
I don't think so. I think it would have just tied it for a second. Because I just think that these are minor inconvenient roadblocks. Rather than,
but there were only four Snape, so
were they though?
Yeah. Huh.
Didn't they have some ashy dude like exploding?
I think that was supposed to look like Dumbledore.
Okay.
Come to haunt Snape for killing him, but okay. Harry yelled, "We didn't kill you!" And he went, "Oh, okay, never mind. Just kidding."
So, what would the fake Dumbledore have done to the real Snape? Just like got an ash in his eyes?
Yeah, and you wouldn't be able to see. You wouldn't be able to talk. You wouldn't be able to see. And then the next thing would have hit him.
And then the screaming portrait hurts his ears, and he can't hear anything. And all his senses are taken away from him. He's Daredevil.
Yeah.
Or Helen Keller. One of the two. Yeah. I don't know. It just seemed a little underwhelming. It was supposed to have all of these, you know, booby traps like the Home Alone house to protect us from the bad guys. And it just didn't seem very.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, either you go all in and they have to deal with these booby traps, or they really are just going to be triggered by Snape and then they don't have the booby traps at all.
Gotcha.
Like, either make there be booby traps or make there be booby traps just for Snape.
Let there be booby traps. If there is to be boobied, if there is to be traps, let them be boobied.
Boobied.
We shall booby the traps. Once we're sure that there's no one else hiding in the house, our heroes settle into an upstairs room. And just when we think, now we're going to get a chance to catch our breath, Harry Scar starts burning something terrible.
Something terrible, man. He's going to throw up.
Yeah, it's bad.
Sick, pass out.
And that means that his mental connection with Voldemort is, I don't even want to say returning, because I guess it never really went away. It's more active than ever, mm-hmm. it seems, and more intense than ever, Hermione, which means more painful than ever.
Hermione.
Oh, got that. Put that tongue-twisting curse on you.
Hermione has, like, this spiel she says every single time. Yeah. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do it. You're supposed to close, your mind. That's why Dr. Dumbledore wanted to do documents. He told you. And I'm like, oh, my God. And he kind of says, he's like, he doesn't come right out and say, I have no control over it. But he's like, it's only opens when he loses control. So, clearly, Voldemort has closed it down. On that end, mm-hmm. it's when he loses control, when he's feeling an extreme emotion, it kind of...
Which he's a teenager, so he's always
yeah.
feeling extreme emotions about a lot of things. I kind of want to know your opinion on this. If you were in Harry's position...
Voldemort's not a teenager.
Would you try to use that connection to Voldemort as an advantage, despite Dumbledore warning you to shut it off? Would you kind of want to... You think he kind of wants to have it?
You want the updates, and we need the updates, but Harry is fully aware that he was used, mm-hmm. and that got somebody killed.
Yeah, he's been fed false information before through that connection. But I just don't think he never had his heart in blocking it out. He never had his heart in occlumency.
Yes. But also, I don't feel like occlumency would have really even worked. Like he said, like, he has no control over it.
Mm-hmm.
And he can try and close his mind, but I feel like it's all one-sided. Voldemort's controlling the valve. When he has an extreme emotion...
I get so emotional, baby. That's all I got.
Okay.
Who sang that song? That's Whitney Houston, isn't it?
Yeah, sounds like it.
Give me a year. What year was that?
1995.
Ooh, I'm going to go earlier than that.
Yeah, see, I didn't start listening to music, though. I didn't care about music.
You didn't care about music? Mm-mm. 87, Jess. 87.
Yeah.
We were in grade school.
Yeah.
And that song came out. You didn't care about music?
No.
Like,
I just didn't.
Like, this is first time I'm hearing this. Like, you didn't. Till when? Do you still not care about music?
I like music.
I like music, okay.
When I was a kid, I didn't care about. Like, my mom played music in the car. I sang along. I knew every word. But I didn't know who the people were singing.
Yeah, I guess you had a different upbringing than I did.
Yeah.
Where?
Like, your dad is in a band.
Yeah, in his 70s. Yeah, we just played records like all day. Like that's my dad had a record player.
Okay, that
showed us how to use it from a young age and.
My grandpa had a record player,
mm-hmm.
and he had one of the little records yep. that was Jesse's Girl, and I would play that a lot.
Little Rick Springfield. Yeah.
And I also had an 8-track, and I would play the Chipmunks Christmas song on the 8-track.
And you said your mom really, really appreciated you playing that on repeat?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I say that very sarcastically.
My mom, and it was
Didn't
really...
Did she try to hide it from you or
she
something?
She hid the VHS tapes at the video store. She told me that they didn't have it because I would just get the same ones over and over again. I think this is very common for kids, though. Like, they have their favorites and they just want to watch their favorite movie over and over again. And
I often did that, like, when we would go and rent, like, Nintendo games and stuff. I would just get, oh, well, I didn't beat this one yet, so I'll rent it again and again and again and again and again and again. I just think there was something so magical about going to the video store.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it's just because you and I met working at a video store. So I kind of have a special place in my heart for that. But, I mean, I worked at Blockbuster for years before I met you working at Family Video. And it's just something that, like, kids today don't get to experience. And they don't want to. They have no desire to experience this. But
we would go to the, like, because we would be at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And she'd be buying groceries. Yeah. And I'd be like,
Mom, every grocery store had
can we go in the video section and get, and I always wanted to get The Fox and the Hound,
mm-hmm.
or Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Like, and she's like, oh, nope, those ones are checked out. Can't get those. Why don't we get something different?
Your mom lied to you.
Mom lied to me.
For your own, it was for your own good.
But the Chipmunks 8-track was red, and all the rest of them were black.
Uh-huh.
So I'd be like, it's right there.
I remember going
right
to,
there.
It was like a record store, called Sound Warehouse, but they had, like, you could rent videos there too, and they had this small, they had all the VHS tapes, and then they had this small section on the wall that had tapes that were almost the same size as VHS, but they were a little bit smaller, and they had, like, this live action Spider-Man, I guess, like, the late 70s, early 80s. It was like a TV show, and I wanted to rent it, and my dad said, we can't get that. I said, why? I don't understand. And he told me why, and I still didn't get it. It's because it was a Betamax,
mm-hmm.
which was like VHS and Betamax was kind of like they were competing for superiority in the video world. And but you had to have like a Betamax player. We had a VCR. We didn't have a Betamax, and I didn't understand why I couldn't get the live action Spider-Man. Because of the fact that it was a Betamax. It was just like one small little section that had maybe like 50 tapes on it. But I think your grandpa gave me like a Betamax a few months back of... it was like some recording when he worked at McDonnell Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, can you try to get the video off of this? And I said, oh, no, I can't because I would need a Betamax player. I've got some old VCRs in the basement, but I think we ended up sending it into like Walgreens or something, and they
have like a service.
Yeah,
a
service that pulls the video off that. You can digitize all your stuff. What were we talking about?
My mom lying to me?
Your mom's a horrible liar. Voldemort's still got a connection to Harry. And then Arthur Weasley's weasel Patronus shows up.
Yeah.
It's a weasel. Carrying a message, because as we've talked about in the last couple of chapters, that's a thing you can do.
Yes, it's a thing you can do.
And the message is, family safe, do not reply, we are being watched. I would be using my Patronus all day.
It would just like pop up upstairs, like, hey, I need some chips.
Yeah, I'd be downstairs, you're upstairs, I'd send you stuff like, what you doing? What do you want to do for dinner tonight? Hey, can you bring me a soda downstairs? I would just be sending them all day.
Could, like, Patronus is bring you a soda?
Let's not get carried away here. I don't know if they can become tangible and carry items.
Okay.
It seems like it should be used a lot more than it is. And we only found out about this happening in the last few chapters of the final book in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, isn't that kind of a better way than sending an owl?
Maybe not everybody can do it, because they said not everybody can do a full Patronus, because they were quite impressed with Harry. Yes, he was younger, and he could do it, but it didn't sound like everyone could do it.
I guess.
Or not everybody has put in the work to do it.
So this is just like the weasel shows up and he's just like talking like with a human voice. Like,
yeah,
a
it's like a recording.
Like a Disney movie.
It's a little recorded
it's like
voice.
The, like
it
the,
sounds
help,
like the
help,
person.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, it sounds like the person.
Interesting. So what's your Patronus?
Mine was a horse on Pottermore.
Do you remember what mine was?
I think yours was also a horse. Like, I have like a black horse, which didn't make any sense because aren't they all silver?
Yeah.
And I think you had like a white horse or something, or the other way around. And I was like, I don't understand because they're all silver.
So a horse would, hey, babe, can you bring me some chips? And you'd send your horse back. I'm busy right now. And I'd send one back. So when you get a chance, though, can you bring them chips?
Our Patronuses are totally Basenjis.
And maybe a caffeine-free Diet Pepsi?
I know Pottermore is law to some, but with Patronuses, you just can't get as specific as people as you need for certain you know, for people.
I think mine would be a Labrador Retriever.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yes. I mean, they usually call it golden. People have golden retriever energy, golden retriever, yeah. But you have a lab, so it would be a lab.
Yeah, I think mine would be a Labrador Retriever, just goofy, kind of wants everybody to like him.
And mine would be a female Basenji.
Mm-hmm. Just like, kind of standoffish.
Don't touch me.
Snarky.
Feed me.
Ron made me think of this question during the chapter, given the situation that they're in. Would you rather know that your family is in danger, but not be able to help them? Or would you rather not know anything at all?
Probably not know anything at all.
Because
if you know they're in danger and you can't help them, then you're not going to know anything until it resolves. Or you can just not know anything at all until it resolves.
Yeah.
And I think my God, you guys went through what?
I think I'm going to go to the other side of that and say I'd rather know they're in danger but be unable to help, because I'm going to stress about
you
it.
You like to worry.
I do.
I worry all the time.
I would stress about it either way.
And see, if I can't do anything about it, I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah, see, the unknown to me is scarier.
But you don't know.
But I know they're in danger.
No, you don't know they're in danger.
No. No, I would rather know that they were in danger and not be able to help.
But if you don't know they're in danger, you just don't know.
I just assume that they're in danger because I'm very unlucky and bad things just happen to me.
Your mother answers the phone. What's wrong?
Yeah.
Happy Mother's Day? Mm-hmm. Sorry?
So Voldemort is crazy mad. He's making Harry's scar hurt so bad that Harry has to hide out in the bathroom.
And pass out on the floor.
And Harry sees a vision of one of the Death Eaters from the cafe being punished for not being able to capture Harry. And Harry sees that Draco is actually the one doing the torturing. Mm-hmm. Whether he's being forced to or not, we can't really tell. Oh, and Hermione even packed Harry's toothbrush.
Yes. Yes.
So
I thought that last... I know it's just like a vision and Harry's in pain and he's writhing around on the floor, but that last little scene was quite confusing. It was just like, wait, who's doing what to who now, huh? And
I guess you don't blame it for coming off a little chaotic, because he's probably not seeing super clearly in his head given the pain.
Mm-hmm.
It probably is kind of like flashes and of...
There's like a weird description of various
things, yeah.
Of the location that I'm like, are we supposed to know where this is?
It's like probably hard to kind of concentrate hallway. What you're seeing through the pain.
And then like the dialogue says, like, I guess Voldemort was talking about himself in the third person, because he was like, you came to tell Voldemort that Harry got away again. He's not going to forgive you. And I'm like, who is speaking?
He's pulling the Trump. People say that Trump did this, Trump did that.
Yeah. I'm like, so then I was really confused. Cause I'm like, no, we're supposed to be seeing what Voldemort is seeing. But if Voldemort's not the one talking, then who's talking? And then we see Draco in the corner too. And then I'm like, so did the mind charm not work? The memory altering? Or do we just know you went there to get Harry and you came back without Harry, therefore Harry got away and you failed.
Yeah.
But we don't know any of the details. That's what they're trying to torture information out of him, but he doesn't have it. Like, it just, I had questions.
So we really don't get a chance to process the magnitude of the fact that the ministry's gone.
Gone. Or just being run by all the baddies.
So basically, I mean, it's in the form that it was before, it has fallen.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the fall of the ministry change not only the wizarding world, but their Horcrux journey going forward? The fact that the ministry is either non-existent or being run by the bad guys, how does that change pretty much everything going forward?
Well, but this, first of all, it solidifies the fact that why Harry and them had to keep a secret. Mm-hmm. Dumbledore told us not to tell anyone. Oh, but you can tell us. You can tell us. You can tell the order. You can tell. But now the ministry is falling. You don't know who's going to get captured and tortured and given Veritas Serum to tell the truth. Like, you don't know. This is just kind of solidifies the fact that the less people that know, the better.
And in their defense, the Order of the Phoenix already kind of played it close to the vest, because they didn't know who they could trust, even when the ministry was in its former incarnation. Mm-hmm. Before it was, we didn't know who was being, if like people were being mind controlled. We didn't know, maybe somebody was had drank some polyjuice potion and impersonating somebody. We had somebody who impersonated Mad-Eye Moody for a whole school year.
The whole school year.
So we know that, you know, they can play the long game if they need to. But going forward, knowing, you know, the enormity of the task at hand.
There were very few checks and balances still left, but the ministry was trying to keep things under control and enforce some rules and investigate and go after Death Eaters.
For all of their faults, because we know that government has many faults, they were still on the right side of the fight.
Mm.
And now
they just don't even exist.
And now we don't have that backup if we needed it.
And I'm sure there are still good people who want to fight, and maybe they will find their way more into the order. But without knowing who you can trust and who you can't trust, that causes a whole other set of problems. You know, like, you know, just because the police department disbanded and then a couple police officers show up, be like, hey, you're fighting, I want to fight too.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be like, we don't fight. We don't know what you're talking about.
You have to play things close to the vest because you don't know who you can trust. But that also means, like you said, that people that might want to help, you don't even know if you can trust them.
Yeah, so it's kind of perfect that you're keeping the would-be resistance scattered because you don't know, because nobody knows who they can trust and who they can't.
But the disadvantage to that is when you're that scattered, you're not strong.
Yes.
You know, what is the Dumbledore quote? We are only as strong as we are united, as weak as we are divided. Or I might have had it backwards, but when you're being careful, but you're also keeping yourself pretty weak.
Yes.
So there's, things aren't going very well for the good guys here. And we've still got a lot of book left to go, so things could get worse before they get better.
Well, they can't go good at the beginning of the book. Then the book be over.
Chapter one, Voldemort falls down some stairs and dies.
And everyone lives happily.
The world
ever after
goes back to normal.
Like, whoops.
I think that's it for chapter nine, unless there's something you wanted to add. We do have an email this week.
An email?
Yeah, an email. Oh, by the way, Bobby Lopez should have gotten his care package by now, along with our winner from last week's contest for who we're going to send to greet the aliens.
I just picture Bobby sitting there in his shirt or listening.
Yeah, I sent Bobby some nice stuff. So shout out to you, Bobby. We love you. And we also love Caroline.
Hey, Caroline.
From New Haven, Connecticut.
Oh.
I wonder if she knows Anastasia.
I don't know. That's not super close, but I know because Leah Bardugo is going to be there for a signing. And I was like, Anastasia, you should go. And then I looked it up and I'm like, well, that's not super close.
You would Connecticut's pretty small.
Not very big.
You'd think that like you could drive from like one end of Connecticut to the other in a couple hours.
Maybe it just on the map it looks, but if you like, compared it to driving to like Six Flags for us, I don't know.
I don't know, because we could literally drive from one end of Missouri to the other in about 3.5 hours.
Yeah, width.
St. Louis to Kansas City.
North south is a little longer.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, east-west. 3.5 hours, 4 hours, something like that. So you would think Connecticut would be like 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
End to end. Caroline writes, hi, guys. I know you've talked on past episodes about what your favorite classes at Hogwarts would be, but what about your least favorite? Which classes would you dread going to every day, and do they have any similarities to real classes you have taken that you didn't like? Interesting. Let me pull up, because I pulled this up when I saw the email.
Yeah.
The
list of classes.
List of classes. And the list of classes at Hogwarts has, I guess the canon has gotten expanded since the games have come out. Like the Hogwarts Legacy game, added a bunch of classes that might not have popped up in the books or the movies. So we got here. Oh my goodness, there's like 27 here. I'm not going to go through all of them. We've got stuff like alchemy, charms, divination, history of magic, herbology. But then we've also got stuff like orchestra, music, art, frog choir.
Yeah, there's a frog choir in the movies.
Study of ancient runes, transfiguration, flying, care of magical creatures, astronomy, apparition, ancient studies, muggle art, muggle music, muggle studies. What pops out as something that you absolutely do not want to partake in?
I don't think I want to do herbology.
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't think I'm very good at taking
plants. Plants are stupid.
I'm not very good at it. They usually end up dead if Peggy doesn't take care of them for me. I buy flowers every summer, spring, whatever. Whenever you're supposed to buy flowers, I buy them. And I put them outside, and then Peggy takes care of them for me. Our neighbor. Otherwise, nothing would survive.
I'm looking at arithmancy, which it seems to be like doing math with magic. I don't want to do math.
I don't do math. You do math all the time.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Just because I've been burdened with this curse to be good at math doesn't mean I enjoy it. You do stuff all the time that you don't like.
What?
Like waking up in the morning.
I like to sleep.
So I'm going to pass on anything to do with math.
Math. Plants. History is really boring, but I feel like if you're muggle born, I feel like you'd be interested in the history of magic.
Yeah.
If you're not muggle born and you've heard all this stuff, you know, growing up, the main points. Well, you still probably need it, but I don't think you'd find it as interesting.
I'm a history guy. You know, I love particularly American history. But so that I would probably be into that either way, just because I love history. I'm going to say that I probably wouldn't care for divination. It's just a little too weird for me.
Yeah, but like when Trelawney is doing it, yes, but then Ferenc takes over and his makes a little more sense. So it just kind of depends. That one's going to go either way.
I guess.
Sometimes you have a bad teacher.
We got astronomy on here. I wouldn't really care for looking at stars and stuff like that. Here's a list if you want to.
If it's useful.
Take a look at some of the things we've got there. While you're doing that, I will kind of answer the second half of that question. Do they have any similarities to real classes you have taken that you didn't like? Let's see. I'm thinking back to college.
Math. So you said you...
I hated... I had to take... You had to have a couple of math classes on your transcript in order to graduate. So I knocked those out real quick, but... My bad experiences with classes have usually been based on the teacher more than the subject. And that's kind of one of the things that I took into my career as a teacher, is that you can make or break any subject that you're teaching. If you can make it interesting and you can make it fun, you can take something that is not generally fun to learn and make it something that people want to take in and people want to experience and people want to learn about. For example, I took a world literature class in college, and the teacher was not very personable, not easy to interact with, not a great public speaker. There's a lot of things about it, and I ended up just dropping the class because I was doing so poorly in it. And I said, well, I don't want to get an F on my transcript. I had never had an F in my life. I ended up dropping it, you know, a few weeks in, and I got like, so I have like a withdrawal on my transcript, but it's not a, you know, failing grade. And I ended up trying the same class with a different professor a year later, and I loved it. And like, I don't know, she was just so much more engaging and, you know, made comparisons to real life in these books that we read that made the stories more relatable to me. And I liked it so much that I took World Literature 2 with her, you know, an extra class. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's really been about less about the topic and more about the teacher. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be in a class that Snape taught. You know, it's just no personality, no charisma, just mean for the sake of being mean. I wouldn't want to be in a class that Trelawney taught, I don't think, just because she's just a little too out there for me. But I think if these classes, you know, I would have loved to have been in Lupin's class. You know, he taught the same, you know, subject that Snape ended up teaching, you know, Defense Against the Dark Arts. So I think that's really the issue for me, is just who's presenting the information, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense.
What about you? What are your, think back to high school, college, some of the classes that you really, really disliked? Was it more the topic or who was in there with you or the teacher?
No, it was totally the teacher.
Yeah, it's the same, right?
I know I've told you this, like, you were talking about math and like, well, at least you can do it. I took the first semester of algebra with a very good teacher. Mm-hmm. Me and another girl, Marty, we had, you know, the 103%, and we're constantly battling for who had the top spot in the class. Mm-hmm. And I'd never really been good at math, but I liked his class. Yeah. And Marty and I were friends, and we just did it. Anyway, the second semester, we both had this guy. I went to a private school, and this guy was not a teacher. He was just getting his, like, seminary hours. He wanted to be a pastor, but he had to do so many hours, I guess.
Interesting.
And he, I don't know, it didn't make any sense.
Right on, Pastor. You're teaching math.
You're going to teach math to some high school kids. His classroom was pure chaos.
Yeah.
We didn't even, he was in like one of the science rooms too. So we didn't even have desks. We had tables. And people sat on the tables and drew on each other. And this was like something out of a movie. There was
Dangerous Minds.
There was this one boy.
Michelle Pfeiffer comes in and they're shooting dice in the back of the classroom.
Yeah, there was a boy, Tracy.
And Coolio starts singing.
He had a 2 liter of soda, and he was just drinking out of his 2 liter of soda, but it wasn't all soda. I'm like, dude, what is going on in this room? This was like a movie. It was pure chaos.
Who was chugging the...
The student.
And they were chugging...
Well, they said there was stuff other than soda in there.
We're talking...
Alcohol.
A little alcoholic beverage.
Yes.
Situation going on.
Yes.
I get you expelled.
Probably, but the teacher, he would face the chalkboard. He had chalkboard. And he would just...
I had chalkboards for about the first 5 years I was teaching. That's how old I am.
He would just sit there and, like, put the problem on the board. And then, like, it took all of his focus to do the math.
Yeah.
And he just sat there and wrote out all the math. And we just were behind him doing whatever we wanted. It was chaos.
You know, the biggest part of... I'm not going to say the biggest part, but a huge part of being a good teacher is classroom management. And it doesn't matter how well you know the, and I doubt this dude knew
anything,
the material very well, but you can know the material like the back of your hand. If you can't manage the chaos enough to get that information out to the people,
or
then you're not a very good teacher.
Like the room was so distracting, even if I had been like a very studious student and I want to learn this math, how could I focus?
No, you can't.
I mean, I didn't. I was playing with everybody else because...
When in Rome.
Yeah. It was chaos. And Marty and I actually weren't in the same class anymore, but we both had him instead of the other teacher. And her parents complained to the principal and they were told maybe she needs a tutor. Because we were both doing very, very poorly. Went from 103.
Preacher needs his hours. You gotta stick them somewhere.
To failing, and it was our fault, not the teacher's. I was like, wow. And then, I mean, I guess I passed. I don't even remember. I had to have passed.
Messing around with these drunk kids in the back of the classroom, shooting dice and. Whatever.
But that guy didn't know anything.
You never gave him a chance. You guys were playing around too much.
He was the worst.
Crazy kids.
And then when I went to college and had to take algebra again, they were doing this new fancy, like, learn on the computer trial. And I literally was in a classroom that was just full of computers. It looked like a computer lab. And you went in and you sat down and you logged in and you put your headphones on and the computer told you how to do algebra. And then you had to like click and move and do. And
we're just removing the human element from it. Totally.
It was so weird. And I did not do well at that class either.
No, I wouldn't think so. I could say who can learn that way. But isn't that kind of what we're going toward?
Trying to do now
in 2026. Yeah. Where everything's on the computer, and I have seen a marked decline in the last 20 years.
Well, they've done studies now that like writing it out,
yes,
makes your brain
absolutely
think about it.
Going when we had to go to the library and flip through the little cards and find the book and go to that book and copy the information out of it, you remembered it. Because your brain was just like little synapses were firing all over the place and growing new ones. And, you know, you can retain information that way. But when you can just ask your phone, what is the capital of this? Oh, that's cool. I'll never remember that again.
Never.
Because I didn't
go, ask my phone again.
Go through the trouble to learn it. I just had somebody tell me the answer. That's just like somebody doing your homework for you. You're not learning anything.
You can look at the answers.
You're
like,
not practicing.
Oh, that was
anything.
The answer. Okay, but you don't remember.
And I see using it as like a tool to like check your work. You know, if I tried to do the problem and then I'll ask AI, like, you know, what's the answer that you got? And if my answer is different, then I can compare and it can kind of talk me through why. But that's not teaching, you know. And I think to answer Caroline's question,
we're still trying to do that.
No, I think we did it. I just think we kind of just did it, and then we kind of just kept going. And she's
found
like,
a soapbox.
And she's like,
to
okay,
stand on.
Okay, wait, I got my answer. Okay,
okay,
okay. You guys can
teachers
stop.
Teachers are important.
But yeah, teachers are totally important.
Teachers are make or break.
And absolutely, absolutely.
And sometimes, like you said, some teachers just don't fit with the student. Like, you just don't vibe.
Yeah.
That's fine, too. There's
just
like,
don't
there
vibe,
are,
man.
There are some very bad teachers, and there are some teachers that are fine, but you just don't fit with them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well said. So thanks, Caroline, for sending that email in. You can always email us, broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com, or hit us up on our social media platforms, that being X, @BroomsticksB, @BroomsticksBpodcast on Instagram. We are on Blue Sky @BroomsticksB as well. We're also on Facebook. That's how Bobby usually communicates with us. We're just on Facebook to shoot us a message on there. And we will give you a shout out and answer your question here on the podcast. Until next time, special shout out to Jennifer, Catherine, Amelia, Jane, Ronnie, Anastasia, Kelly, Olivia, Jenny, and Emma. We will be coming back at you with Chapter 10 next time we get together. But until then, be a wizard, be a witch, be a muggle, be a squib, but don't be a jerk.
Or a git.
See you later.
Bye.